Okay, it's 7 o'clock on July 9th, 2019. This is the Sustainability Commission. I'll go ahead and do the roll call. Julie Moeller.
Here.
Eric Simon.
Here.
Shannon Roberts.
Here.
Beth Chang. Andrew Basney.
Here.
Lisa Gillis.
Here.
Susan Sherritt.
Here.
Okay, do we have any public comment? If you could just sign your name on the clipboard up there, let me make sure it's up there.
Is there a clipboard?
It's probably just underneath. There, okay. There it is.
Can I just fill it out after I talk?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. My name is Jess. I'm a rising senior at OPRF, and I'm working on a Girl Scout Gold Award project. So that's the highest award for Girl Scouts. And the focus of my project is bike safety, especially bike helmets. So the first component of my project was a survey that I did. I had a survey for one survey for students and one survey for adults. I had over 160 responses. And some of the interesting things that I found were about 60% of the students I surveyed said that they always wear a helmet. I asked for their reasons, and the top reasons were for safety or for because their parents or guardians tell them to. For the people that said they rarely or never wear a helmet, 60% said they don't wear one because no one else wears them. And the majority of the students I surveyed said that they do ride in busy streets or intersections. So with this data from my survey, I'm hoping to compile it into an informative video, basically to present students who may feel like they don't need to wear a bike helmet, just to present them with some facts and that hopefully they'll make the right decision. And another component of my project is a community outreach event, which will be at Thursday Night Out. I'm partnering with Wheel and Sprocket, a local bike shop, and I will be at their booth at Thursday Night Out next Thursday and the Thursday after that, so July 18th and July 25th. And they are donating a bike helmet, so there will be a raffle for the bike helmet, and I also designed a bike helmet pledge, just a pledge to wear a bike helmet for anyone. Anyone can sign it, and that will be available to people too. And then, in addition, an Oak Park police officer, Officer Love, will be there. And Oak Park has an ordinance that youth under 17 have to wear a helmet. I'm told that River Forest has something similar. And actually, in my survey, I asked if the students know about the ordinance, and 71% said they don't. So that will be a good time for parents or students to ask Officer Love about the ordinance and maybe find out some more details about it.
Congratulations, that's a great idea. And did you just survey OPRF students? Is that?
So, no, actually there were 13 different schools represented. Okay. in the students, so ages 6 to 17.
Oh, great. Wow. How long do you plan on? Are you just going to do the Thursday night out and then it's kind of over? Or are there other opportunities maybe?
I'm still working on the video. I do have a Facebook page also. It's mm-hmm. called Oak Park Bike Helmet Safety.
Mm-hmm.
And also part of the description of my project is that it has to be sustainable. So I'm still looking for options on ways that I can make it sustainable as well.
That's great. I don't know if you're aware, but River Forest does have an ordinance for wearing bike helmet for kids under 16. And I think it was about 4 years ago that we had a campaign called All Heads and Helmet. And it was the River Forest police went out, and instead of giving a ticket if they found somebody not wearing a helmet, they gave a ticket for a Slurpee at 7-Eleven, a free Slurpee, if they found a kid wearing their helmet. And I think we did that for 2 or 3 years, and it was successful, but it's kind of waned, and mm-hmm. maybe this is an opportunity at a party at the park or something. Maybe we could have you maybe there's some cooperation.
Yeah, that would be great.
So when if you write your email on your on the sign-in sheet, mm-hmm. that would maybe we could contact you. You guys would be interested.
Yeah, I think it would be a great tabling opportunity mm-hmm. to sort of see how it goes next couple Thursdays in Oak Park and sort of just continue to spread the word.
Yeah, if you're interested in doing something in River Forest.
Yes, I would.
That's great.
Sure.
Great job. Nice. A good project, too. Does anyone else have any questions for Jess?
Jessica, I apologize for being late, but I want to say that the awareness building thing is a great idea because I didn't know the River Forest had an ordinance until you started working on this. And that 71% figure, is that was that just generally, or was that people didn't know about the Oak Park ordinance?
Yeah, well, I didn't really know what it was in River Forest, so I did just ask about the Oak Park ordinance.
Okay.
But there were people who took the survey who live in River Forest, so I guess that applies to both now.
It wouldn't surprise me if it's a similar percentage here, so that would be great.
Yeah, we kind of found that during, well, elementary school, kids wear their helmets because their parents make them, and they listen to their parents then, but once they hit junior high is when they kind of start, and then high school, it's... Yeah.
And there's tons of people who bike to OPRF.
Yeah. That's so I think it's a good awareness campaign. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
You.
Okay. Any other public comment? Doesn't look like it. So we have the we already adopted them pretty much, do we? Or?
Well, we didn't formally adopt them. We had one change, so that's why they're still on the agenda.
All right. Do you have a move? Or do you? Go ahead.
Right. Is there any questions on the meeting minutes from May 20th? So if not, I'll take the vote to adopt them. Julie Moeller?
Yep.
Eric Simon?
Yep.
Shannon Roberts?
Yep.
Beth Chang?
Yes.
Andrew Basney?
Yes.
Lisa Gillis?
Yes.
Susan Sherritt?
Yes.
Okay, they're adopted.
Great.
So was that the 619 minutes?
No, that was for May 20th. Right,
May 20th, so we're just,
Okay,
we'll have
a couple months back.
The June ones, the September meeting. So we'll start with any meetings that, Eric, do you want to start?
No, I'm going to pass.
Okay. Lisa?
Do you want to talk about today's meeting?
Go ahead. I think we worked on it together.
Julie and I attended a Plastic Free July retailer meeting. It took place at 10 a.m. in Village Hall around these tables, although we actually had another table going that way, so we all sat this way. In attendance were six retailers from the River Forest area, Good Earth Greenhouse and Cafe, Fresh Time, Farmers Market Jewel, La Peralita, Mexican Grill, River Forest Chocolates, and Walgreens. So actually, out of 32 invites done via email and USPS, actually that's not a bad thing. Most of the feedback for retailers that could not make it was they didn't have enough staff to kind of have people, you know, kind of attend here, and or their corporate headquarters did not, like, you know, approve of them taking, you know, they would not pay for them to come to such meetings. So we have some work to do potentially at the corporate level. We shared a vision for the village's reduction of plastic use, of specifically single-use plastic. This comes out of requests made by Charlotte Meyer and Mackenzie Lovell, as well as Ari Ortega, students at Willard and Roosevelt Middle School over time. Julie Moeller, our fearless leader, led the discussion, leveraging a short deck, and then Charlotte Meyer actually came with prepared remarks. Most of the retailers who could not come here have stated that they would like to learn more, so we will be distributing meeting minutes as well as the prepared remarks of Charlotte and Julie's deck. We also now have a very like up-to-date contact list for those 32 retailers since Julie and I specifically did outreach to kind of ensure that we had attendance. So it was, I think, overall a really, really good conversation. We can share kind of the meeting minutes with you guys as well once they're available.
Yeah, I'll just add that it was a really great discussion with ideas about reducing single-use plastic. And Kathy Aducci was there, Katie Brennan, Patty Hennick were there from the village, and Kathy Ducci made the announcement that the village will also be looking at their single-use plastic use and try to eliminate that at any public meetings or public events that they have. I was very happy. Like I said, the retailers had really great ideas on ways we could support them, and it was a nice way to meet them and hear what their ideas were and how we could support them. And I think it's going to be a good collaboration. So they were very excited. So lots of good ideas. So we will be talking about that in the future after we get the minutes done, and ways we can help them and meet with them. We offered up ways that we could connect them to recycling programs, that we could connect them, that we could individually meet with them if they were interested in, you know, changing any type of products that they use. Of course, like Walgreens, it's a national corporation, it's a little different, but they were also, they had ideas for maybe helping us have reusable bags, even a contest for designing a bag that they would sell, and then the profits could come back to River Forest. And so there's lots of ways that we can promote the businesses and let people know what they're doing, so that people or students like Ari and Charlotte know that their village is taking it seriously, and they don't just have to kind of wonder what's happening, so since it's in the news a lot. So I want to thank Lisa for her work on developing the letter and helping me call all the retailers. So that was also kind of interesting. Yeah, it was interesting to talk to each of them. I mean, and there's more retailers. We just really targeted the grocery stores and restaurants. So, yeah. So thank you, Lisa.
Stay tuned, more to come.
Yeah.
Julie, it sounds like it went really well. Just one thought to keep in mind is, as something comes out of this, remember we have a Charlotte and Mackenzie's donation if we can put it towards something to support this effort.
Right. And I'll add that Fresh Thyme donated some snacks for the meeting, so that was nice. And they were plastic free.
Yep.
So,
and they did give us some of their bags.
Yes.
Right there, so that we'll have to figure out what to do with.
Yeah. So yeah, there's some momentum around this, so that was good. Any other meeting updates? Lisa, any other meetings?
Not for me.
Yeah, you've been traveling.
I've been away.
Yeah. And I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome our newest commissioner, Susan. So you probably haven't attended too many meetings on our behalf, but if you want to introduce yourself and let us know.
Hello, my name is Susan Charette, and like the core founders of the Sustainability Commission, I'm coming from the River Forest Parks Foundation, where I attempted to be somewhat of a sustainability liaison, I would say, with mixed effect. But so I had worked with Katie Brennan for a while, and so when her spot opened up, she thought of me.
And how long have you been in River Forest?
I have lived here, I think, 20 years.
Okay.
20 years, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so enough to see a lot of waste.
Yeah, right. And do you have any meetings to report that you, did you attend the artificial turf meeting, or?
I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did attend the artificial turf, sadly.
Okay, yeah.
I spoke, yeah.
Yeah, I was unable to attend that. Okay, great, thank you, and welcome again. We're happy to have you. Good. Full commission again, so here we go. So nobody leave. I attended, I'll quickly just say, two meetings. I did the reusable bag meeting, and I went to a mayor's caucus meeting. And Katie Brennan, she just cannot give us up. She attended as well. It was on June 26th, and it was the Illinois Center for Urban Resilience and Environmental Sustainability. And it was a really great meeting. They introduced Illinois Cures, which is, I'm trying to get the, what it stands for here. But basically, this gentleman, Don Wobbles, is the Harry E. Preble Professor of Atmospheric Sciences and a U of I Presidential Fellow. He heads this group called CURES, and he was actually Obama's environmental advisor on policy. And Edith Makra from the Mayor's Caucus introduced him and his team, and as a resource for all, you know, municipalities to use. They were really there to listen, to see what kind of information do we need to move our projects or any of initiatives that we're doing forward. And a lot of what came out of the meeting was that, you know, we need metrics. We need information as we're working on projects to try to get energy or trying to get waste. You know, we only have so much time and bandwidth as commissions, and how could they help provide information for us to give to trustees, just tell them the urgency of something, or, you know, they're the experts, they've been planning this, they're making the projections. And so it was, I mean, the main thing I got out of how they could even help River Forest was really helping us tell the story. And so they left us with, you know, their cards, and I think there'll be a lot more dialogue to happen in the future. But it was a really inspiring meeting to know that they were out there doing the work and helping. Are you familiar with CURES or the group? Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't. Let's see. Yeah, but they were good. So I will be contacting them and talking to them. The main areas that they were talking on about focusing was housing and neighborhoods, land use and natural systems, sanitation and water. They're doing a lot of work with the aquifers and this southern region that are drying up in Chicago area, waste and recycling, transportation and energy management and access. So so there'll be more to come on that. So that was an interesting meeting, and that was, I think, all the meetings that I have. John?
Well, I can give an update. All the lights in here are now LED.
Ooh.
I'm surprised nobody noticed.
I was just going to say, I think I felt like a little brighter,
right?
In here.
It's a little bit brighter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they were able to retrofit them all in the existing, you know, locations. And we also did the pumping station, the inside of the pumping station, and the exterior lights of this entire building.
Nice.
So, yeah.
And the plants look nice outside.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Right, the wildflowers out there? Yeah. At first, they weren't looking good.
Yeah. But they've taken
They look
off.
Way better now.
Yeah, they look like summer, and it looks nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks great.
So that's my little update.
It's a big update. Thank you.
Nothing then.
I haven't attended any meetings since our last one, but Julie and I are preparing for at District 90, the Green for Good presentation will be on Monday to sort of wrap up and pass the torch, since Julie and I are both graduating from District 90.
From eighth grade.
More on that next time.
Yeah.
The report that the meeting that I attended along with John was back in June 25th, the Trail Advisory Group meeting on the Des Plaines River Trail, where they have had an engineering firm has been presenting on various recommendations. There are a total of 10 segments all the way up from, I think, is it Park Ridge, Toohey and Park Ridge?
Right.
All the way down, and we actually were able to add two segments into River Forest along Thatcher all the way down to Roosevelt. And what they've been doing at these various meetings is they've been basically saying what is the status of the existing trail, and what are their recommendations, either to sort of completely change the trail, just improve the trail, use other signals, or, you know, other routes across different streets that are safer. And this actual meeting was just on the first four segments. So I guess there's going to be a few more meetings before we talk about the segments that are in River Forest proper, but I think it's, you know, a testament to President Ducci that she actually talked to people to extend it from the existing eight segments into River Forest, because I think these segments are going to also be allow the trail to tie into the Prairie Trail,
right?
Which is, you know, just another, you know, infrastructure improvement that I think a lot of bike riders are going to be excited about. There's a lot of parts of the trail that are continuously flooded or underwater. So, you know, I think this is the sort of the engineering study part of this process, and then they'll get comments, and then hopefully some approvals down the line and work on funding. You know, the funding will be, you know, a major part of the initiative as well.
That's exciting. I know when I was reading the report, I didn't realize that the Prairie Path was the first Rails to Trails path that had been done in the 1960s. So learned something in the report. I thought that was good. So, well, that's a nice segue into our next section. And Andy, I will let you take it over.
Yeah, so thanks so much. There's a lot of work, and Eric Russell from KLOA is here as well as sort of the, he prepared the report and is sort of did the, you know, the engineering behind and the write-up of the River Forest Village of River Forest Bicycle Plan itself. And he's here and available for questions and comments or anything that, any questions that the, any of the commissioners have. The action plan is for us to ask questions and make a recommendation to the board at their next meeting to approve the bicycle plan as it is with any, you know, final changes they may want to make. I don't know if has anyone on the commission had a chance to go through the report?
But I do have typos, some changes, duplicate words, that type of thing before you present it. I didn't bring them this evening, but I thought I could send them to you or send them on to you. Both of you. But yeah, we can, I did read it. I have to say that I have relied a lot on, I went to the very first meeting on the bike, the Alliance, but with the plan, I guess, how will it be working with the safe routes? I mean, how does that integrate into the school? Like, it wasn't very clear. Does that make sense? Yeah,
yes,
that'd be great.
Yeah.
Or I guess again, the stages, I mean, yeah.
So the safe routes to school plan is a series of traffic control improvements and crosswalk, primarily crosswalk striping. My understanding is that the village is going to be implementing that this summer.
Okay.
Yeah, that I can. Yeah, I can speak to that. We're putting in the signs on the north side of town, north of Chicago, up to North Avenue, within the next couple of weeks, and then the next section south of Chicago after that. And then the thermo striping associated with the crosswalks by the end of this month.
Okay, so that's village, and then this is the part of the comprehensive plan that will be adopted by the village.
And
is the plan you're talking about?
Right, and they kind of go hand in hand. They don't conflict with each other. Most of the bicycle facilities will be on the street. There's a few locations, like along Harlem and North, that are just too busy for an on-street facility. So we've recommended a side path, which is primarily taking a sidewalk and making it a little wider to accommodate bikes. In that case, if you're riding on the side path and you come to an intersection, you'll use the crosswalk that will be restriped as part of the safe routes plan. But generally, if you're riding on the street, whether it's just a posted route or it's a bike lane or the marked shared lanes, you'll follow the rules of the road just like an automobile would. You're supposed to stop at a stop sign and go through signals as a car would. So there really isn't any conflicts with the safe routes plan. And the safe routes plan are primarily the walking routes, all the crossing points are under stop control or traffic signal control to provide the safe route for kids to get to the school. And if kids are riding their bikes to the school, the way the bike plan is set up is it leads to all of the major destinations in the village, including the schools and the parks. And so a student could follow the bike route or the bike plan to get to school, just like you could follow the safe route plan to walk to school.
I think the bike plan has a high concentration on safety, and just like Eric was saying, if you look at page 16, sort of has the proposed map and the where they're going to be putting in bike lanes, shared lanes, and a lot of it has to do with they don't want to a spot where they would have a shared lane, and maybe because they don't want to get rid of parking spots. So there's some spots where it kind of goes back and forth between where there would be a sort of a shared driving and bicycle lane. and then it goes back to sort of a true dedicated bike lane, just where it sort of works. But the idea is to get some paint on the ground so that it's clear for bikers to sort of know where to go. And I think it also helps with safety, because if someone's driving down the street and they see particular paint on the ground that says this is part of a bike path, or there's a route, or there's signage, it just increases the ability for people to drive around in a safe manner.
So the plan is intended to, as Andy mentioned, preserve on-street parking, but to provide continuity across the entire village. So routes begin and end mostly at the village boundaries. They connect to all the major destinations. Where possible, they connect with the facilities in the adjoining communities. They certainly connect with any paths that are in the forest preserves, and any smaller local paths that are within the parks themselves. But it is a combination of bicycle lanes on the busier routes where the width was there, and we could provide those dedicated striped lanes. There's some marked shared lanes, and those markings that you've seen on the pavement, they're not kind of tucked off against the curb. They're almost in the center of the roadway, so it'll be very visible to a motorist that this is a shared roadway.
Yeah, probably similar to the ones in Oak Park. Like, here's a parked car, and then they're right here.
Yeah, they're intended to be far enough out that if someone opens the door of a parked car, they're not going to clip a bicyclist that happens to be riding close by. So they also guide the bicyclists a little further away from the parked cars or from the curb itself. And then there's a lot of routes on some of these slower moving routes, some of the quieter residential streets that are just posted routes. But they're posted because they do lead to the destinations in the village that people do want to ride to.
Yeah.
I mean, really almost all of the residential streets, they're all rideable, and they could all have been posted routes, but to try and have some order to a network, we tried to focus on those residential streets that did lead to schools and some other destinations. Some of them are already being used for that reason. The Grand Illinois Trail is a good example. I mean, it's already using some local streets, and it's a posted trail. It just happens to use the street. So a very similar type of concept in what the bike routes would be with the posted signs.
So, I mean, I don't see any opposition to the plan. Do you?
No, I just have a question. First, thank you for this incredibly comprehensive report. I confess I haven't been able to read it all in detail, but it looks so well thought out that I'm sure everything in it is excellent. But I just have a question about the marked shared lanes. Is the intention then that if the bicycle is traveling at a speed less than cars, that the cars are expected to adjust to that?
And the bicyclist has the same rights to the road. Now, generally, these are on streets that are signed no faster than 30 miles an hour. I think most of them are 25 miles an hour. Someone doesn't ride a bike that fast. But there's not that much of a differential. But generally, if a bicyclist is out in the road and the car has to either maneuver around them or drive behind them. But the blocks are short in the village, and there's a lot of stop controls on some of these streets. There's some signals, and they're coordinated along Lake Street. But generally, those types of facilities are where there are stop controls, or just it's a slower posted speed. Volumes are moderate on the road. We didn't propose a marked shared lane on a faster moving on Thatcher, for instance, or at Harlem or North.
I was just gonna ask. So I mean, on this might sound stupid, but so then how do you use this, Andy and John, when you go to the meetings for?
To get this approved?
When you go to the, what's it called? The meeting you were just at.
The Des Plaines River Trail.
Yeah.
Right.
So how does this, this is great information.
I mean, this is a plan, but it's not set in stone for the future. I think Eric
because
would agree
it need,
with
because
that.
Because it needs funding, right? I mean, is there any funding opportunity
through
the
dynamics change. So if there's a trail that's recommended along the west side of Thatcher, going down to the prairie path, that doesn't match what's in this plan, we would go with what's recommended by the trail group and try and match it up as best as we can.
That's
yeah, the only the only sort of overlap I think is along Thatcher. Is along Thatcher.
Yes.
On that side of the map.
I thought that was the only overlap, but I didn't know because I was wondering, do they have any funding for something like that? Because which area do you decide to start with first?
Well, there is an implementation plan. You can speak to that.
There is an implementation plan in the report. It looks at three different time periods: near term, mid term, long term. The near term projects could occur within 2 years. They could occur actually much sooner. They're mostly the posted route, so it's just bike route signage generally. The marked shared lanes require some lane striping. We have that in the 2 to 5 year time frame, most of those projects, but there's a lot of striping that's going to take place in the next month or so with the crosswalks. It's possible the village might be able to work with the contractor to put down more striping and get some of the marked shared lanes in there as well.
Like some leftover paint or something.
Yeah, no, the side paths, for instance, that require reconstruction of sidewalks, we have that more in the long term. There's more cost involved with that. Not huge costs, but there is more cost and more advanced planning and possibly some engineering. There's some landscaping that can get in the way when you widen sidewalks, so there's a little more advanced planning and engineering associated with that. And so that's gone into the longer term. But there are three time periods, just as a guide. Ideally, the sooner the better. Most of these can be put down. If a trail ultimately goes in along the Des Plaines River, I mean, that'd be great. That would just go right as an overlay on this plan. It doesn't really conflict with what's along Thatcher. Ideally, what's along Thatcher would be more of a near-term implementation because a trail along the Des Plaines River might, you know, take a few years to actually design. But that would be an ideal facility on the west side of the village.
I mean, the only complications along Thatcher is what I had to have to get approval from
IDOT. Yeah, so that would be a lot of the roads and paths that are recommended for the longer term are IDOT routes. We would have to get their permission to do anything along North Avenue or Lake even or Harlem or the north section of Thatcher.
If it's within their right of way, which I assume that it is. Yeah.
So North Lake, Harlem,
But they're generally minimal, those type of improvements. It's not affecting really traffic flow per se. It's outside of the curb, so it does affect landscaping that private landowners or possibly the village maintain anyway.
Okay.
I mean, the significant areas are going to be sort of in the middle of the plan with, you know, Lathrop, north to south, Lake, Chicago, Division, sort of as areas that we wouldn't have to really involve IDOT or anyone else, and those would be significant improvements that are probably pretty easy to execute on.
Well, Lake we would, but the other ones we would.
Has the village or the trustees at all indicated that, you know, this is something they would fund in the future? I mean, knowing that we don't know what that means.
Well, we don't know every detail that they would recommend to fund in the future. I mean, they're in support of a bike plan in general. So,
yeah.
You know, they would look at it probably piece by piece going forward. I would hope with the extra MFT dollars, we could use some of that for striping. So,
and what are those?
I'd want to look into that as
MFT?
Well. MFT? Yeah, the motor fuel tax.
Okay. Mm. Oh.
Yeah, there's got
to
be some.
Which 100% goes to roads and.
Right.
Well,
and there's grants that can be pursued by the village for implementation as well, especially when it comes to bike facilities.
Right.
And is the village also thinking of an additional 3-cent tax on gas?
Right.
It's in their jurisdiction too, so that we can figure out. Well, I mean, I'm not sure. Go ahead.
We're just trying to figure out where the gas stations are.
Yeah, the mobile. Shell.
Mobile and Shell.
Yeah, Shell
and mobile. As long as there's not a 3-cent tax on charging my car, I'm good.
Right, there you go. Well, you did get an Illinois state.
We did get a big increase.
Yeah, does anyone have any other questions? I mean, yeah, I don't have any other questions. I think it's been very thorough. I know you've been working very hard on it, and I know that Katie worked on it. I kind of came in like at the quarter end of it.
Yeah, so. I mean, Katie was sort of the main assembler of the biking task force that we put together, and she was obviously integral to those meetings and working with Eric and others.
And I know she's a big supporter of it, so. We need to vote on passing. I know the meeting will be July 22nd. I will be there. If anyone other of the...
Yeah, let's go ahead and vote just to make sure. So I'll just do the roll call on that. Julie Moeller?
Yes.
Eric Simon?
Yes.
Shannon Roberts?
Yes.
Beth Chang?
Yes.
Andrew Basney?
Yes.
Lisa Gillis?
Yes.
Susan Charette?
Yes.
Well, thank you for being here, Eric. We were trying to stump you, but we really didn't have anything to Okay, we'll see you on the 22nd. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, who doesn't like bikes, you know? So it's... Thank you. Who wants leaving us? So moving on. Oh, we recapped kind of the weirdest. The reusable bag day. It was, like we said, it was good, and Charlotte did an excellent job, and we'll be putting this stuff on the website. Okay, number seven, energy and energy letter of intent for seven generations. So, Eric, I'll let you start because I know you sent out an email regarding. I have to say that is so cool. I calculated my house and everything on the
Google. So which part, Google Sunroof?
Yeah.
So so Lisa and I were like kvetching over that because it's like the coolest tool that nobody knows about. So, or hang on, let me pull this up.
Were you copied on that email?
No, I'm interested.
Okay, yeah.
Is that where they score your...
Yeah, you put your address in, and then it says you can get 936 hours of sunlight this year.
So what Google did is, you know, Google knows everything, right? So
right,
scary.
Yeah,
and this is actually, Google Sunroof has actually existed for, like, you know, seven or eight, maybe even longer years. It's been around for a while. And they just take, Google Maps data, and they basically layer it with weather data. And then, you know, sprinkle in, you know, energy rates and all those kinds of things. And it's great. So you put in your address, and it's really accurate, actually. The solar installers have really fancy software that essentially does the same thing in a lot more detail, but, like, it basically has the same outcome. So I sent out, so just to remind everybody of what kind of the task was here, the request from the commission was that we really need to have resources on our websites that kind of help River Forest residents sort out a lot of the complexity and confusion around solar. One of the things that had come up in the last meeting was all the letters everybody gets and all the door-to-door salespeople, you know, and can we provide a resource that kind of helps them navigate all that. So I threw together just a kind of real quick draft. I've already added to it since I've sent it out. Just throwing some ideas out there, and I'll just kind of quickly roll through them. But when everybody gets a chance between now and the next meeting, just between now and whenever, just email me any thoughts you have on it, because I would like to start. These aren't things that we have to do at one time. This is stuff that we can kind of put up on the website, you know, now. We don't really have to wait. So take a look at it. Any feedback would be great. I kind of broke it down to... that we wanted to provide easy access to, you know, can I put solar on my rooftop? And the, you know, good tools for that are Project Sunroof, which we just talked about. So it would be very easy for us to add that link to our website. Also, what you can do with Google Sunroof, and I put a picture on it on the document, is you can show River Forest. And this was actually interesting, because 78% of the buildings in River Forest actually can economically put solar on the roofs. So you can do kind of this more macro you know, Google Sunroof, River Forest type stuff. So I think that would be cool to put on the website too, so people can just see the overall potential our community has for rooftop solar. NREL has a little bit of a more complicated but still super cool calculator. I think that's a good link to put on our website. It's estimated performance. So you have to answer a few more questions. You have to put in your address like you do with Project Sunroof, but then you put in, like, what's your electric bill, a couple other little bits of data, and it spits out kind of a more comprehensive, here's what you can expect to generate with a rooftop solar system.
And the payback, yeah.
And the payback, which obviously the economics of this are important. And so far all the things I've talked about have an economic side of it, which I think's good. Because that's the question you always get is, like, you know, am I going to save money? Does this pay for itself? And in Illinois, it does. And then a confusion a lot of people have is around incentives. This is particularly confusing when people come to your house and try to sell you, you know, into various solar packages. And so there's actually some pretty good websites out there that we can reference. First of all, my suggestion is that we put up kind of in our own language, like a summary of all the incentives, and that include links so people can go deeper. ComEd actually has decent information on their smart energy website. The ISEA, ISEA, which is the Illinois Solar Energy Association, I think I got that right, they have a whole homeowner resource page. They're basically, you know, government, and it's actually good. There's a lot of good information on that. And then Illinois Shines is the brand's name of the ABP. That's the Adjustable Block Program. So they're starting. This is going to get better and better by the day, right? So the ABP just came out, the Adjustable Block Program. That is the free market or the open market where you can sell your energy credits and receive money, and that helps you pay for your system. That's the green credits. And it was called the Illinois ABP. Now they're starting to make it more kind of consumer friendly, because really all the first customers were large commercial projects. And so that's called Illinois Shines. They have a website.
I like that, Illinois Shines.
Yeah, and it's like a decent website, and from what I hear, it's like gonna keep getting better and better and more consumer friendly. They have all the incentives listed out, super easy. So I think we can do a really good job with incentives, because the incentives are pretty much federal tax credit at 30%, Illinois Shines, which is going to give you the ability to sell your green credits and make money, and that gets paid off either in 1 or 4 years. And then there's various ComEd incentives, including inverter grants, which might or might not help you pay for your inverter, which is the most expensive piece in the system. So I think we can make sense of this, because it's not that complicated. And then consumer protection is kind of the other big piece of this, and that is the scariest part of solar right now, which is the whole, like, every developer that is building large-scale solar, you know, in fields out in Illinois somewhere, have hired sales companies to go out and sell the crap out of their out of the power they're going to generate. And so I need to do much more work on this, and frankly, so does everybody, because that's still a bit of the Wild West. I think we directly have language that basically talks about letters and salespeople. The Illinois Solar Energy Association, really the best advice right now is, like, if you want to do business with one of these companies, the first thing you need to do is see if they are members of ISEA. They should be. And if they're not, that's actually like a red flag. So there isn't great kind of oversight of this right now, but that's the closest thing we have, is that, you know, they have to meet certain obligations to be a member of ISEA. And if they are, at least we know they're a professional, you know, installer or developer. The consumer protection part needs more work. We need more resources. We need better ways to sort out all the noise out there. So,
okay. So my questions are, so it's funny, like, you sent that out, and I'm, it would, I would think anyone in River Forest who got that information would do exactly what I did and jump on there and go, 1006 Forest Avenue, ooh, oh. You know, like, I, you know, and get really geeked out at the whole Google thing and then go, oh, now yeah, what? I don't know how to do this. Yeah, not going to be here for 20 years. Okay, close it. So I do think that, you know, it should just, we should develop, you know, an FAQ. But, and we can all contribute questions to that. But one question I have before we even get that far down the road is, are we getting ahead of ourselves, getting ahead of what NREL might be providing us if we start to put this stuff up? I know I said I'd like it up, but I'm just saying, do we just put up parts, or do we wait for NREL? And can you update us on what's happening with?
Yeah, so, okay. I'm sorry, this is good, multi-part question.
Yeah.
So the NREL meeting is tomorrow. So, okay, so to remind everybody, there was that big workshop all-day thing where NREL and the Rocky Mountain Institute came in and facilitated this big Oak Park and River Forest, you know, kind of solar workshop or renewable energy workshop, not just solar. It was like a massive amount of information that was produced that day, and we've kind of been sitting around since, and that was a while ago, kind of waiting for, it was promised that it would be regurgitated to us. Tomorrow there's a 1-hour meeting in Oak Park from 12 to 1 that I'll be attending. That is kind of a workshop to go through all the stuff that came out of the meeting, the, you know, hundreds
like a recap
pages
meeting?
Of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, we already got the documents, and then this is like to basically, you know, go through the documents and figure that out. But to answer your question more directly, Julie, we're, I think, a ways away. I mean, we're, like, still just trying to figure out, like, what happened during that workshop.
Yeah.
So I think it's okay. I think it's complimentary, I guess, is my short answer.
Yeah.
I think we can put up resources, and we're only going to be able to improve on it as the NREL stuff more and more kind of comes to fruition and we build that master plan that we've been talking about.
Okay. So another multi-tiered question here is, how can we help you come up with questions? How do we, you know, move forward? Like, so one of my questions when I even just looked at your information was like, well, I'm not going to put solar in my house. How can I get renewable energy? You know, how can I sign up for it? Through aggregation or whatever. That was one question. And then, again, I'm maybe combining too many things, but then Gary asking us for the letter of intent for 100%. I mean, I'm not inclined to sign that, or I don't see the purpose of it, and I think it's just another pledge protocol thing. We've already committed that we want this, and I don't.
Well, we're members of his organization, right?
Right.
I'm not sure, like, what else.
So, to me, I'll just vent for a second. Is the time put into writing and drafting that letter, I thought, was misguided, because I think they should be working on the minutes or coming up with, you know, I mean, I'm sure it took a, I just don't know the purpose for the letter.
I don't understand the purpose either at all of that letter. It was, yeah.
Because we're in, and as we know, no one's going to be 100%.
But
so I just think, I mean, I'm kind of like, okay, the pool is there. We don't know how deep it is right now, but, you know, couldn't we, you know, go tread water or something
yeah.
and see, you know?
So I agree, and not to pile on that, but the letter was just, I thought, just really awkward, because we have over and over committed to this. We're like already in the middle of the pool, and he's like asking,
okay,
like, hey, who wants to go swimming?
Yeah, so I personally wasn't going to do anything with that letter. I wasn't the letter of intent.
Well, I mean, I guess I moved into discussing that since I was at the meeting where, at the Planet Green meeting where it was presented, I would say whatever conclusion we come to, that we would just share with Gary our feedback. I mean, if the village doesn't want to sign it or suggest modifications to it that would make it something the village wanted to sign, then we should just tell him, you know. But I would say that the sentiment at the you know, there were many organizations and institutions represented around the table, and the general sentiment was it seemed like a good idea, but that it needed to include, you know, more action items, because, like you said, just sort of like a, you know, overall kind of commitment everyone around that table is in favor of renewable energy, right? But I think the idea, what I heard was that all this has been being discussed, but, you know, action items haven't been happening, so this is just kind of to once again bring it to the level of attention of like the boards of the different organizations, because if you're going to have something like that signed, then, you know, it has to get elevated.
So it seems like then the intent of that was not really for us.
For us, meaning the Sustainability Commission?
For us being...
Well, it was for the village.
For people who are already, have already committed in numerous different ways. It seems like it's more for maybe members of the community that are...
I don't know if that was the... I think the intention was all institutions. But, I mean, I can take the group's feedback back to them, whatever we decide tonight, right? I mean... I guess others will hopefully come back if we want to say no, we just don't feel it's necessary to recommend to the village to go through a paper exercise, or rather, I guess, instead of just saying no, we don't want to sign it, it would be nice to say, well, where we would rather see energies directed is to whatever, you know, like we are on board now with the NREL, or I'm not sure, like you said, what all came out of that, but would there be something constructive to suggest to say, well, we want, you know, institutions to sign on to something that's coming out of NREL, or...
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I take, like, letter of intents, proclamation, you know, seriously, because, you know, it starts to give you a direction of where you want to go, and I felt like we were already in the pool, and I mean, I'm not being critical that the letter came out, it just, well, a little bit, but... I feel like that letter should have come from the NREL meeting and not Planet Green. Planet Green is overseeing the NREL, but I feel like it should have been something that came out of that if you want to relay that to them. I think that, you know, it was just the core team kind of sitting and going, well, we should make sure people are signed on. Well, pretty much everybody at that table was already, you know, signed on or at that NREL meeting. So I'm not sure who my focus for them would be, that it should have come from the NREL meeting, and two, who do they want to sign it?
So this is my, you know, my ongoing beef with, right, like there's 50 different organizations all trying to do the same thing regarding solar. I think what's just, like, I'm going to see Gary, by the way, it's not tomorrow, it's Thursday. Okay. I'll see Gary on Thursday. You might, if you see him before me, or...
Well, Lisa will be at the next Planet Green meeting.
Okay, cool. I mean, we have, like, no, you know, obviously, like, we support Gary and we support Planet Green. And
exactly.
This is not like, you know, we're not dissing them somehow on this. It's just, it just seems kind of awkward and irrelevant right now. I mean, we've, like, signed the mayor's thing. We've signed, like, the Paris Accord. Like, we've... Like, you know, like,
but I just, we've done all these, I would like Gary, like, what else do we need to sign? As a commission, I don't want to take my time and take that to the village for them to sign.
Yeah.
Because I'm not really sure what to tell them that they're signing, because they think we're already working on this. So I think that might be some important feedback, is to say, you know, we've already been talking to the village, and it's actually kind of awkward to say, could you, you know, sign this letter of intent? They'd be like, you know, and why? So...
Okay. So maybe it's also kind of couched with the, it sounds like you feel like the NREL was productive, and that you'd like to see energies go towards, you know, moving to action items on the end, following the NREL path? Is that
fair? We would like things to be coordinated and synchronized, and to have like this one-off letter was weird.
Okay.
Right, when we're already involved with him on so many of these projects.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to write that up and give it to you, or so you can just kind of say it at the meeting. I just feel like, you know, if they asked our opinion of it, I feel like we should follow up and tell them what we...
Yeah, absolutely.
And be proactive in what we thought.
Well, but it wasn't... Oh, sorry. Okay. I said it wasn't part of the concern on the letter that it wasn't really... Wasn't part of the concern that it wasn't really feasible or didn't feel feasible?
Well, it's that 100% thing that... It seems like everyone's backing away from, because it's like basically an impossible goal, at least in the, you know, foreseeable future.
Yeah, I did think people around the table said it also had to say something about energy efficiency, because, you know, 100% renewable sourcing, like you said, isn't feasible. So,
True, but even the combination of both things is
okay.
So it's like that movement that's going on, and Shannon, maybe you see it better from your professional angle, but the movement to come up with more realistic stuff versus when movements first start, it's like, woo, like, you know, 800% renewable by, you know, next Tuesday.
Yeah,
and,
cool.
You know, it's, stuff has finally settled out, and it's now, there's a lot more science, there's a lot more kind of realism about, you know, how to accomplish these goals. So, yeah, the 100% thing did kind of bug us a little bit.
Yeah. So, is it fair to say that we, I mean, do you all agree that we should come up with some type of FAQ or some type of resources for the website as a place to begin?
To your point about NREL, shouldn't we, I mean, so I like the idea of having these resources on the website that, I mean, if there's a, you know, a theme, it's the confusion out there to the consumer. Can I do all these things?
And we could just start with
and
that.
And just starting with sort of some of these things, which are really helpful that Eric's put on these pages about, you know, Project Sunroof, other things like that. But wouldn't, I mean, I don't know if, are we qualified to put together the FAQs, or should we rely upon NREL to sort of guide that process a little bit better?
Yeah, and I think we could even just start with FAQ, like, why are people coming to my door? You know, I mean, like, it could be just starting with the basic.
Oh, I like the consumer protections and those different things and the sort of the professional member installers and just sort of good information.
And then build on it as we get more information from NREL.
Yeah, and by the way, like, we're borrowing everything anyway.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of original content here, but you're right. I mean, first of all, we shouldn't reinvent the wheel. Secondly, no, we're not qualified to.
We're definitely.
Okay.
That
so,
said, how can we help you?
Okay, so let me send the latest version of this out, get feedback kind of on this initial piece. Your question on can we put together an FAQ, what are the questions? Why don't I send out something following this that asks that question to the commission? What I'd be interested in is what questions are you hearing from your neighbors? Because all these conversations have really started that way. Of like, you know, my neighbor asked me because they know I'm on the Sustainability Commission, this. So let's compile those questions, and I think that kind of becomes our FAQ, and we can build on it from there. And then we'll just layer in all the professional stuff as it becomes available. What I would like to see, and my guess is that somebody else is going to do this, you know, before we do, is like more of like a, you know, choose your own adventure, like how to answer the questions, and it tells you which car to drive away with. Something that eventually is like, I can't put solar on my roof, or I don't want to, you know, then it takes you to the next step, which is like, okay, here's your options. You know, that would be really nice to have that kind of like more interactive guide piece, but I bet somebody's working on that if it's not already out there.
Well, and the reason why I keep kind of pushing this is because there are resources, and that we could be paralleling, you know, we could approach the University of Illinois, the you know, group that I just met with, because there's other municipalities in the same boat. And I mean, NREL, this is great. I mean, it's wonderful that we were approved with Oak Park to work with them. And I mean, only four cities, right? It was Denver. Washington, D.C., Chicago, and Kansas City, I think, got the grant from NREL. So, but that doesn't mean that we should just wait on just them. So we can learn what other mayor caucus. So I guess I'm trying to learn what questions I can go back to, you know, at a mayor's caucus meeting, instead of just going, wow, that's really cool, you could help us. I mean, I want to find out what I could be asking them to help us with. So, you know, we should talk more. But also, I would just encourage, I mean, energy is probably the biggest thing that we could try to figure out for the village. I mean, that would have the most impact. And so I would just say that we should be thinking about it and be trying to help.
Yeah, to build on that, if you think about like what we actually have direct ability to change, we can't change air quality. We don't have any industry here. We've talked about the waste piece of this, like we'll continue to improve on it, but it's complicated. You know, energy is one of those things that we really can make a dent in, and there's multiple ways for us to do that. And they finally make economic sense too. So
mm-hmm.
I agree.
So, so I am going to propose, I'm going to jump ahead here, that the August meeting that we cancel August, and that I brought a copy of the goals for 2019. Let's see. And I was going to propose that we, now that, you know, really Eric and I are the only two original commissioners here, and that we take a look at these, and we're all working on things. I'm working on waste, you're working on energy, but really, where could we get the biggest movement? I mean, I'm not saying that we're not going to continue to do programs like for the library or, but now this reusable bag and the single-use plastics has come up and working with retailers. I think that's a really powerful thing to, enhance the already wonderful life we have in River Forest, So I'm looking for things that can really bring more people together and inform them about the sustainability. So I'm preaching a little bit here. I've just been trying to think, because I keep looking at these goals and I'm like, okay, how do we get to this goal? But it's really looking at all of them together instead of us all just working on our projects. Does that make sense? I mean, we need to be working on the bike path. We need to be attending Planet Green meetings and working on metrics. But I think we should take a look at these and look at our areas. Like, we still have Sue on here for water. We never do anything about water. If there was something about water that affected, I feel like we kind of approach water through native plantings. You know, I feel like, so maybe these need to be not redone, but shifted a little bit. Or even I would also offer, if any of you have an idea and you say, you know, like, I mean, you made a connection with Jess and you said, you know, she came to the meeting tonight. I think that that's could be really powerful. I think that also we're going to pursue having the student commissioner here. She'll be joining us in September. And she wants a job. You know, she won't be a voting member or anything like that, but she wants a job. And she already talked to me about creating a list of, you know, sustainably friendly retailers. And I was like, what, are you listening in on my conversation or something? But she's like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if I had an app with my friends or something and I could recommend places? And I was like, you know, like, wow. So I think we need to be thinking, you know, I don't know if the word's bigger or if you guys all just think I'm preaching here. But another reason I'm canceling the meeting in August is that I'm going to a climate reality leadership workshop in Minneapolis. So it's accepted. It's a program by Al Gore that you apply to. Have you heard of this? Climate reality leadership thing. So I get to meet Al, and it gives you the tools, you know, to, so it's a 3-day conference and it meets all day and you meet other people working on the same things. And I feel like it could be maybe an incentive to put us all around one thing and push. Am I making any sense?
Yes. Yes, you're making sense. But the only thing is, I will say, is I'm hearing two different things. I mean, on the one hand, I think we all want to have impact. And
right.
I do agree that picking, you know, it might be a matter of sort of reprioritizing. Yes, the commission's scope covers all these areas, but
that's
for
good.
The next 12 months or whatever it is, I like the idea of picking, you know, just two or three things that sort of all of us as a commission are working because I think we can make more progress that way. We're all stretched so thin, so when we're each working on one thing, you know, it's just hard to kind of pay attention. But I also hear you saying that we want to be open to these kind of opportunistic things that are brought up by people in the community, and especially I think there's a lot of energy coming from the youth, and I think that the It's Our Future program that Planet Green is doing, I think that's really going to take off. There's, I think, a lot of energy around that. So there's that balancing thing, because I think it's when you respond to these opportunistic things or something that someone is saying that you do, you know, you can get sort of pulled off or something because you want to support everybody's cool idea. So I'm not sure how to reconcile those two things. I mean, maybe it's sort of saying we'll have two primary commission-wide goals, right? But that we also want to be open to, especially things that are bubbling up from community members and youth, because I think it's incredibly powerful that, you know, Charlotte and Mackenzie, they did that, and that a year later there's something more for them to do, not just like, okay, we came and we presented and we made this donation and everybody sort of patted us on the head and said, that's nice, right?
Right.
So,
exactly. I think there should be something that we can all work on. But, I mean, I don't want to lose things like the River Forest, the walking tour, the tree walking tour, that we can't do something like that. That's a benefit for people. I think one of you is missing page 3. But what I did with this is, I don't know if you remember when we presented to the village board, we had our goals, and then we also had, so you should have 4 pages. Yeah, you're the one that's missing. So the first time I forgot to double side, and that was when I printed them, I double side. So, when we presented to the board, we gave them an update of what we had accomplished in 2017 or 2018, and then we set these new goals. So I just got rid of kind of the updates of what we had accomplished, and I just put the blue in here, which is what we had decided on the new goal. And like it says, like I said, it's education is Beth and, you know, me, and then Eric is energy and Beth. And then we have open space ecosystems, you know, Andy and Shannon, and waste is me, and water was me and Sue, and then data metrics, again, that was a new goal, and that was Shannon. But now we have, you know, some outreach to retailers happening. So I guess I would like you and Susan, you know, now that you're new, what is your area of interest? Do you want to continue to work on this, or do you have any ideas, like, we should just drop water from here and just incorporate it into here. I'd really like your feedback, and so we're not having a meeting in August, and I'd like to come to the meeting. I'd like you to email your ideas. I'll send out an email to get you thinking about this, and then in September we can kind of shift this around so that we can start the year with a student commissioner and start working on things again. Not that we're not working on them, but I mean with another new focus. So, I mean, I don't really expect the goals to be changing that much. I guess I just want to make sure that we're all, you know, using the same language and walking this, you know, the same direction here, so that we're using our time well, because I know everyone's really busy as I ramble on. So. And what? Like I said, energy is like the biggest thing we can do for this village right now. So, I mean, I love waste, but I mean, I think, you know, I mean, I could be, you know, convinced to work on energy. I just think it's huge, and there's a lot of questions about it. So Eric, you're on, okay?
Yeah, I agree, and with Beth, what you said, I thought made sense too. Like, this has always been a working document, and it's always, I mean, this was. The original version of this was like 12 pages.
Right, I got huge. Rid of all the kind of updates.
Yeah,
stuff.
So we've spent our, as we learn more and more as a commission, we've been kind of narrowing in on, you know, what we know we can accomplish and what makes sense, what's going to be provide the most value for the village. So like it only makes sense to continue that evolution
right.
of this.
And this aligns with, you know, the Planet Green direction and the Mayor's Caucus direction. And, I mean, I even hear, you know, the Mayor's Caucus saying, okay, what's the one big thing, you know, we should be working on that we could provide our, you know, municipalities? And to be honest, it's, you know, it's energy and water come up as, you know, more of a regional problem even that we should maybe be focusing on. So that's where I was coming from, so. Go ahead.
I think it's a great idea, because I think the idea of how can we make the most impact is really thoughtful and a great use of efficient time. One thing, so I think you all know I work with companies, and sustainability is this touchy-feely area, right, where there's no, like, it's really hard to measure, it's really hard to, so what companies do to figure out what what is most important in sustainability. It's called a materiality assessment. And the way you do this to figure out what sustainability topics are material, like whether it's climate change or water scarcity, so for what drives more important is you ask a bunch of different groups of stakeholders, and you have them rate what for them is the most important and what's the least important. So maybe not for September, because I don't want to slow it up, but maybe something we can think about longer term is doing some sort of type of assessment. We call it a materiality assessment, where we could ask, you know, we would be probably the closest to the specialist, then we could think about, I don't know, can we get some community data about what's important to them? I know we did the survey, or taking those survey results, leveraging the survey results from last summer. We could also think about what the trustees think is important to them. I don't know, it's just like an idea for long, long term, how we think about what's most important.
Yeah, because, I mean, the commission's 2 years old, we're in our third year, we take this to the commissioners and they say, yeah, this looks good, this is, you know, we hadn't thought about this, so this looks really good. But maybe there are, I mean, we've all participated in the comprehensive plan. Maybe, you know, look at that and say, are there ways that the things that are important there? I mean, we've got this huge, TIF happening, and there are maybe there are opportunities there that we should be approaching the village about. Trying to make more work for them, but maybe there are things that they hadn't thought of, you know, as far as waste disposal, recycling, you know, torn down buildings, you know, that type of thing. So, or energy efficiencies that we should be thinking of that maybe trustees really aren't aware of. So I guess, yeah, that's a good point. That's kind of the direction I'm thinking. If we look at the comprehensive plan, where could we even add more value there that people may not be thinking of? And the top things that come to me are energy, water, you know, and waste, and how we're using those. Not looking to make more ordinances or anything, but just trying to help, take a look through the climate reality lens when you're building or widening a street or, you know, making it smaller. So
just out of curiosity, why do the sort of native gardens and plantings and natural lawn care, why is that not coming as high on your mind? You're just thinking it's less impactful, or I'm just curious.
No, I guess it's already kind of in the process, so uh-huh. I guess I'm not really focusing on it. Because I guess it's, I feel like there's momentum there already. It may be just me just trying to frame this in my head to kind of wrap my head around it, but I look at the goals and I'm just kind of like, okay, what am I going to work on today? I feel like I'm not.
Well, there's too much.
Yeah.
There's too much.
Yeah, and I can kind of tick things off my to-do list, but I'm not really sure I'm moving it forward.
I think the intent of the Tier 1 versus Tier 2 is a little bit what you want to, I'm trying to paraphrase for my own sake, what you want to get to, which is like we have these kind of important top-tier goals. And then there's all the other things that we do that are important, but, you know, they're kind of tertiary or secondary or whatever it might be. So that was the intent of, like, that mm-hmm. Tier 1, Tier 2, but mm-hmm. we're just not there yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, take a look at it and, you know, so. I mean, I think something like the bike plan that, it's a living document. It's being recommended to the village. It works with other things that we're working on. Is a really good example of, you know, coming up with a plan that gives direction. So I think that's really helpful. That would be a good example of providing direction. So I'm not sure, that's probably about as clear as mud, but, you get August off. Just the other updates then were, in kind of old business, is artificial turf, as we know, did pass. They will be moving forward. They, depending on how big the area is, they will be getting the metropolitan. They might have to get approval, so there may be some more movement there. They might have to go to the board, village board, so we should definitely keep on top of that and see, attend meetings as possible, and see how that progresses. But it did pass, for those of you who may not know.
So I wasn't able to stay for the vote, but as reported in the newspaper, and then I talked to Katie Brennan, there was one commissioner who was expressing concern about the cost, because I think these numbers were, I mean, they say they don't have a vendor, so I don't know how they can have exact cost down to like $50 at the end. And also they're very unclear about, they have a $50,000 contingency for the, if they have to do something to the water. But as someone spoke there, it could be far more than that, depending on how it actually comes down. And I understand the plan was specifically designed not to come onto their radar, but they're still unsure about that. So it seems like there might still be some scope, depending on when they come back with the actual cost. Also, I spoke to the way they were financing it was a little bit bogus, because they're including income streams that are already there and which cover the maintenance. So if they take funds from baseball that are already covering maintenance and move them over to finance this at least minimum $500,000 project, then what's going to replace that and pay for the maintenance? And they didn't really have an answer for that. So I don't know if there's still some scope for input. Yeah.
I agree.
So was this just for the one softball field?
The two infields.
Two infields at Keystone. The girls' softball and the boys' baseball.
Yeah, so according to the commissioners, even though the problem lies with the girls' softball field, in the interest of cost savings, they're going to do both the girls' and the boys' infield.
But they're also doing it, I think, because they're trying to optimize space. I mean, like, if you think about the park, you know, our fellow commission, park district board, whatever, I mean, is more use of all those fields, and there's not enough time to let them rest and actually be used well. And I think the fact that they're moving forward with this, they approved it so they can try to get a grant, but the first step is actually to do the assessment they should have done. So to your point, they're just moving forward with, like, yes, in concept we believe in this, let's use the $50,000 grant, let's see if we can get additional funds, but they still have a lot of work to do to figure out if it actually is, if they can do it, given the water reclamation and everything else that's going on. So to your point, I think there's a lot more I's that'll have to be dotted and T's that'll have to be crossed before this will move forward. Mm-hmm. But they are between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they kind of threw out there nonchalantly the fact that, well, maybe we just have to limit the number of kids that play baseball. Well, that's not realistic. But actually that might be the course of action that you'd have to take if you didn't do something like this. So while I don't agree with them moving forward, I understand why some of the commissioners don't feel like they have a choice.
Right.
Yeah. So I think they're greenlighting it to say, well, let's kind of at least start doing, like, get it more real with regard to what does this really mean, if that makes sense.
We should just stay informed just as residents and as a commission as to what they're doing. And I talked about the student commissioner, and that was all I had for you.
I have a question. Is there just going to be one student commissioner? Because we had also talked about maybe seeing if we, because Dominican University had...
Yeah, that is an option that's open if we want to have a college level, but at this time it'll just be one student.
And are they here our entire meeting?
They're here for the entire meeting, and they will just fill out the application and get parent permission, obviously, and they will be a non-voting member. So, high schooler or college, but right now we're focusing on high school because that's who approached us. But if we wanted to add, you know, have a high school level and, you know, in a college level, we could do that as well if we wanted to. But we don't have to change anything in our bylaws or ordinance. And, you know, I thought we would just make the term the school year and just see how it goes. So,
okay.
I like that idea.
I mean, other students don't really know this is an opportunity, so I thought we would just start with the student. And, I mean, even Charlotte said today at the meeting, let me know, I'd be interested in helping out. You know, so we don't know where it's going, but we do know students are interested. So we should definitely continue the conversation with Dominican. Yeah.
I will say that, you know, part of the solution to the too much work to do is to somehow structure projects that volunteers in the community can work on. And we have talked about this before, but the whole thing about managing volunteers, that in itself is a real
job
for somebody. But, you know, in my experience, that's how you increase your impact, right? Is if, but you'd have to put the thought into how to define the projects and give people the right amount of oversight and autonomy to feel like they're getting something done. So,
yeah, and I think you bring up a good point. That could be a whole nother, you know, thing, is engaging volunteers. We've collected names, but we've never really known how to engage them, just because, again, we didn't have the time. So. Okay. Great. All right. Move to
8. For the next September meeting, or is it set for
it's
the second
set.
Tuesday?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was going to bring that up. I'm going to be. Thanks,
oh,
Beth.
No.
Yeah, so I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be gone at a conference. Can we move it up to the 3rd? That's the day after Labor Day, though, so that could be tough.
Yeah, I can't.
Or,
I can't,
or we
do
can
that.
Do like Wednesday the 4th.
Okay, sorry. We're in September right now?
Yeah, in September.
I can do either of those days.
I can't do the 3rd. I could do the 4th.
Okay. I'll move my mani-pedi on the 4th.
Okay.
Hold on.
My blowout.
So 4th is all right.
Hold on. I'm going to check real quick.
Wait. Lisa Gillis is a busy woman.
Why is it the 4th? Or so you moving? Because it's the second Tuesday. Aren't we the second Tuesday?
The 10th would be the second Tuesday.
But aren't we always the second Tuesday?
Why aren't we doing it that day?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be gone.
I'm
the
10th.
I got to open
the
room up.
Oh, you're gone on the 10th.
John, I'm going to help you out here. I'm gone on the 10th also.
Okay.
So, see, that's just my...
Where are you guys going?
Yeah, where are you guys going?
It's awesome, man. The IFSA conference at the Los Angeles Convention Center. Super fun. Anything you want to know about the airline industry, you come and join us. We'll have a good time.
Okay, I'm fine. The 4th is...
I don't know about the 4th, but it's not... I don't have a definite conflict. I have a maybe conflict, so I think you should just set it if that works for everybody else.
So definitely maybe on the 4th.
Definitely. Maybe on the 4th, yes.
Yeah.
Want to move to adjourn?
Second.
Second. Okay. We're done. Thank you.